This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Monday afternoon, August 5th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. It's important for parents to put their children in position to handle the family wealth they'll receive in the future. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, reports on the services sector and the trade deficit lead this week's data. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And talk about starting off the week on a real down note. The market's selling off, the Dow down nearly 2.5%, NASDAQ down 3%, S&P 500 down nearly 3%. And is there anything coming out in the week in data that could calm the nerves of jittery investors today?
No, not really. We're going to have to wait to see probably what happens in the coming weeks. But I think the most persuasive piece of data that the markets could get would be, starting with the CPI report in the middle of this month, but then really looking ahead to the employment report last month to see if the number of jobs added far below expectations, that miss was a one-off or it's part of a new trend.
Now, today we have two reports on U.S. services and then later, and then also the U.S. services PMI and then ISM services for July coming out today. And that kind of stalled the sell-off on Wall Street this morning because that services number was a sign of a healthy economy.
Yeah, that's right. We've been saying for a long time now, more than a year, that if you look below the surface, below the top line of these reports when they hit the news, there's evidence that the economy has been slowing, but there's really not any evidence that we're in a recession or about to start a recession. What it looks like to us is that if you take the consumer, for example, consumers have been gradually running out of money. And what do people do as they run out of money? They stop shopping at the expensive stores and they go more to the discount stores. So we're seeing the economy kind of downshift like that, but not a recession. And the economy is still creating jobs. Inflation has fallen quite a bit. And it's fallen faster than wages. Wages are still, in terms of purchasing power, still a positive for consumers. So we see quite a lot to sort of support this economy going forward.
We're talking about the week in data with Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. And then later this week, tomorrow specifically, we have numbers on the trade deficit for the month of June. And could you explain the trade deficit? Because I think a lot of people hear that number and assume that the U.S. is an economic laggard compared to other countries. But what is the trade deficit and what would be the trade deficit, the ideal number in a healthy economy?
Well, it just really depends on what's going on in the rest of the world, too, right? Think about the trade deficit as the dollar value of the stuff we sell minus the dollar value of the stuff we buy from overseas. So if we're selling a lot of stuff overseas and not buying much, well, that trade deficit's going to be a positive. But what that might mean is if we're not buying very much, it might mean we have a weak economy and they have strong economies and vice versa. So the negative number in this case that we expect is probably more reflective of the U.S. being stronger. In other words, we're going to buy more from the rest of the world. The rest of the world is going to buy relatively less from us. And so it's going to look like a negative number. I wouldn't put too much stock by that. Like I said, markets are really going to be focused here in the next coming weeks on inflation, making sure that stays low, and on the jobs report next month, early next month.
Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, why it pays to prepare your children to handle the money they will inherit one day.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
There's important work to do ahead of the transfer of wealth between generations. Let's discuss some of the key elements with Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And a number of analysts say that we will see possibly the greatest generational transfer of wealth in human history in the coming decades as the baby boom generation bequeaths their estates to their younger children. And that means a lot of millennials and members of Generation Z will be in the driver's seat as far as their family's assets are concerned. And what are some things that families need to know now before the handoff takes place?
Thanks, Rob. And I like to use this analogy. Think of your young adults or children. They're kind of interns. And would you ever have an intern go from being an intern to the CEO of a company within a few months? Probably not. They need a lot of training and a lot of education. So I think that it's very important that the parents start early in educating the children. I do have one of the most important things I think about with the transfer of wealth. I have a saying that often you can give your valuables to your children, you know, your money, your jewelry, your art, but what's, I think, as important or more important is your values. So I think at an early age, it's really important to teach these values to your children. Were you a saver? Did you live within your means? You know, kind of show them those values so that they can bring that forward.
And then as they grow up, at what point in the family assets internship, as it were, do you really start to get into the nitty-gritty and open up the books and start showing them this is what we have, this is how we got it, this is how we save, and with the idea that they will continue doing that after you're gone?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it depends on the age and the maturity of the child, but you know, if you're talking children that are in their 40s or 50s and you're comfortable, definitely opening up the books. But I think at a younger age, sharing, how did you budget? How did you invest your money? Did you have an advisor? You know, maybe explain the benefit of having an advisor, benefit of being long-term, benefit of being diversified. Maybe share a few horror stories. What happened in 08 with some of your friends who weren't diversified? What happened during COVID, how some people got out of the market, but you didn't, and were able to maintain your long-term objectives. One, you know, fun thing might, as a family, and, you know, I think finance is fun, may not be fun for all your listeners, but, you know, do an example. Like, what if you were to get $50,000, ask your child, you know, all of a sudden you got $50,000, what would you do with that money? And maybe go through. Maybe some of that should be saved for long term. Maybe something could be a fun trip or something for your family, using some of it in the emergency fund. So it gives them something to think about. But some of the key principles, live within your means. I try to teach my kids at a very early age. Try to give them more confidence. Maybe get them a book. Maybe go through some investment strategies. But one thing I do want to mention is education also about inherited money? If your child does inherit it and they have a family or they're married or a significant other, they should keep that segregated because and not what we call commingle. So don't add joint money into that because if you keep it segregated, that is still going to be the money for the child. And we never know what happens in the future, protects it, you know, against a divorce or anything else that can happen. So I think a really good education for your child would be to keep that money segregated. You work very hard for that money. You want your child to enjoy it. And so that's a good lesson to learn to teach your child.
Great advice. Sherry Grucco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago and author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life.
60 minutes of financial planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Pharmacy giants Walgreens and CVS continue to shutter underperforming stores. Let's get the latest from Bruce Jabson, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. Bruce, thank you for joining us today. And not too long ago, back in 2019, if you were if you took the train from the Ogilvy Transportation Center, a passenger on one of Metra's Union Pacific lines, you could choose from one of two CVSs to take care of your afternoon train snack needs. There was one in Riverside Plaza. There was another in the French Market, and now they're both gone. And the CVS in the French Market is still shuttered many years later. And that's the case across a lot of cities and towns in America.
It is. And I live in the city, so I try not to venture out to the suburbs. But no, I'm just kidding. But no, you see that. I mean, it's interesting. All of these things, there's so many dynamics going in the pharmacy and the drugstore market here. You know, obviously more people get their prescriptions mailed to them, mail drugs, all that type of stuff, and even the Amazon and others are having drones deliver them to your house. But anyway, so you have some issues. Tale of two pharmacy chains here. Walgreens, their stock is down. They're going to be closing up to, on their last call, maybe 25% of their 8,600 locations. Because they've got other issues, and what they're doing is, I don't think it's not so much that they're not making money on a lot of these places, it's just that they're not making enough. And so they're going to go into more lucrative parts of the pharmacy business as things change. Let's face it, the pills and capsules that people get are largely generic and cost pennies. The more complicated drugs are specialized drugs that are infused, that are injected, you know, Ozempic or Humira for rheumatoid arthritis, cancer drugs, all those type of things. But they require a more expensive type of operation, especially pharmacy. So Walgreens is going to is investing like $24 billion. They reformulated that business. CVS, on the other hand, so they're closing stores to go into more lucrative business. They got to get their stock up. They got a bunch of problems up there. CVS, on the other hand, they just announced last week they're rolling out a new model of store in some of the stores that they've closed, where they've spent $10 billion on Oak Street, which is a company based in Chicago, Oak Street Health, that has clinics geared toward people who are 65 and over on Medicare. So they have this side-by-side arrangement where the pharmacy is going to be next to these clinics that are staffed by physicians and nurse practitioners and so forth. We know that CVS has MinuteClinics, and they're doing this for the Medicare-eligible seniors, which is different than Walgreens. They're different animals because CVS can entice you to go to their clinics because they have 25 million people insured by Aetna. They can give you lower copays. They can guide you in the networks, all that other stuff. So that's what's going on with those.
Bruce Jabson, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, candy giant Mars looks to expand into the snack aisle, plus a couple of suggestions from our Monday stock pick.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune
I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Hurricane Debbie, now a tropical storm, still packing strong winds and drenching rain. A CTA passenger dies after falling on the tracks on Chicago's north side. Candy maker Mars has its eye on the salty snack business. And it's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a couple of suggestions from an investing pro. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 889 points. The NASDAQ is down 476. The S&P 500 is down 134. We'll talk about the sell-off coming up in just a matter of seconds right here on the Noon Business Hour. 84 degrees in Chicago under partly sunny skies, going up to 87 today. It's 1231. Topping our news at the half hour. Much of the southeast could be in for record rainfall this week from the remainder of Hurricane Debbie. Much more from CBS News correspondent Jim Crisula.
Debbie is expected to linger over the southeast most of this week. It's expected to dump epic amounts of rain. Billy Staley is with Emergency Management in Orangeburg County, South Carolina.
We are looking for rainfall totals anywhere from 10 inches to 20 inches across the county, depending on where you're at in the county. That's prompting us. We're having to review some of our rescue plans.
Debbie has already caused widespread power outages in Florida and coastal Georgia. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
A 35-year-old man is dead after accidentally falling onto CTA train tracks last night and coming into contact with the electrified third rail. It happened around 9:30 at the Howard Red Line station in the Rogers Park neighborhood. He was initially taken to St. Francis Hospital in Evanston, then transferred to Stroger in Chicago, where he was pronounced dead. The name of the victim has not been released. It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. It's been the story all day. Markets are lower. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com in San Diego. Thank you for joining us today, Jim. And the markets, the three major indices down over 2% today. And this should not come as a surprise if you've been listening to the Noon Business Hour and to your segment specifically. You said a correction was due, and it seems like that day has arrived.
Yeah, it has, Robin. Basically, you know, the employment report came out on Friday. The unemployment rate ticked from 4.1 to 4.3. And I've been warning really for a number of months that there were a lot of factors telling us that we would see the unemployment rate work its way higher as the labor market softened. I think there's a potential, Rob, though, that there's a little bit of an overreaction to that simple function of saying, oh, my God, the unemployment rate's up to 4.3. The unemployment rate goes up for two reasons. People are laid off from their jobs. Well, that's easy to accept. But the other reason it can go up is if a lot of people decide all of a sudden they want to look for work. And so if you look at Challenger and Gray, they report monthly on how many layoffs there have been. And that hasn't moved up that much. So I think, Rob, there's an overreaction. I think there's a good chance when we see the next employment report come out that the unemployment rate will tick down slightly. But that doesn't change the bigger picture. I think the economy is going to slow more. Ultimately, unemployment is going to head higher.
And then just taking a look at some of the other factors at play today, obviously the employment report on Friday opened the floodgates to a great deal of anxiety, it sounds like, that would may have been lurking behind the scenes, because even 2 weeks ago we were talking about that Fed Chair Jay Powell stuck the landing, the soft landing, and now those same people are probably screaming about interest rate cuts.
Well, they are, as a matter of fact. Oh, my goodness, the stock market, the S&P is down 9%. We need help. Please throw us a lifeline. No, what's kind of coalesced is on Friday, a person who developed the SOM rule, named after herself, basically gave a recession signal when the employment report came out. But I think that signal is probably somewhat premature for the reasons I cited earlier, Rob. But the bottom line is, The ISM services number came out, and it jumped over 50, something that I wrote about in my July macro tides that we would see a rebound. So my point is this concern about a recession happening immediately, I think, is a little bit overblown, and that ultimately I think we'll see the market, you know, kind of stabilize and then mount another rally as people start to say, well, maybe our recession fears aren't warranted. And I think that's what's likely to happen in the near term.
And Sam herself even said, look, we're not in a recession. I mean, maybe it's something to keep an eye on, but we're not there just yet. So everybody relax. And then some other things going on today, too. You have Berkshire Hathaway reducing its position in Apple. And then this is my favorite one. And this is the Japanese Central Bank raising interest rates. And it turns out a lot of traders were using the yen to borrow money at lower interest rates to then invest in American stocks. And as a result of the central bank in Japan raising its interest rate, that made those investors rather jittery, too.
That is what contributed in part to the way we saw the market opened, Rob. Good point. The Nikkei, I think, was down 12%. It's hard for, if you will, international financial markets not to respond to a decline like that. Again, I think we're likely to see people start to talk about that, hey, the labor market isn't quite as weak as it suggested. The ISM services numbers were okay. That should bring some respite and stabilization, I think, in the next week or two. And then that should lead to another rebound in the market.
And then lastly, when we're talking about the possibility for interest rate cuts, Chairman Powell did leave the door open to a September rate cut. Can you now, is that basically set in stone, given the way things are going?
Yeah, I don't think this has anything to do with what the stock market is doing right now. They wanted more confidence that inflation was going to come down. I think they're going to, you know, recent data has helped them. The economy slowing, the labor market is easing. So to me, a cut in September is just really likely. It's smart. They don't want to wait too long. So again, the one point I will make is that if you go back historically, Rob, when the Fed cuts rates, the market has two very different reactions, either up 15% if the economy doesn't subsequently go into a recession, or down 15% or more if it does. And what happens is you have a window after that first cut for about 2 months where, you know, the decision is still outstanding. And that's why I think that's another reason as we approach the Fed's meeting in September, the market has the window of opportunity to rally in response this time around. It's only when we get more subsequent data that shows, no, the economy really is sliding toward a recession, that the market will have trouble.
Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com, based in San Diego. Thank you for joining us today.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Candy company Mars is reportedly in talks to buy Kellanova, which makes Pringles, Cheez-Its, and also has the Morningstar Farms brand. Let's talk about this potential deal with Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com in Los Angeles. Phil, thank you for joining us today. When Kellogg's spun Kellanova not too long ago to making it its own standalone Chicago-based company, was it spun off with the intention that it would one day be acquired by somebody?
I think so, Rob. And if you take a look, what Kellogg's really want to do is separate its declining cereal business from that part of the business that was really on a growth phase, and that's Kellanova. So it makes sense for them to spin it off. And to be honest with you, this deal could be worth about $30 billion. So for a lot of the execs over at Kellogg's, for a lot of the stakeholders, you know, they're really in a good position to make a lot of money here.
Now, it's irresistible to talk about how this is a sweet and savory combination here on the part of Mars, you know, maker of lots of candy products and sweet products. And of course, Kellanova has a very robust salty snacks portfolio. But does this give Mars a little bit of extra firepower in the snack food wars? Because Mondelez was growing not too long ago. And does this allow these two giants to now stand shoulder to shoulder?
It does, but also keep in mind that Mars, which is privately owned, has always, you know, diversified. They've got a huge pet business. They've bought a lot more products over the past couple years. So yes, but if you look at the Mars enterprise, it's much bigger than just, you know, Snickers bars and Mars bars. And this really fits perfectly with what they're doing. And also, frankly, from a distribution standpoint, a lot of these products, Pringles, Rice Krispie Treats, Cheez-Its, fall right in line with the kind of distribution and the kind of sales that they've got.
We're talking about the proposed Kellanova-Mars merger with Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Now, there have been, we've had some discussion on this program and elsewhere about the potential threats to the snack and sweet industry, in particular the Ozempic effect, the number of people taking those GLP-1 drugs and losing a lot of weight, and as a result, buying less salty snacks and sweets. And is that part of the equation here?
Yes. There's no question that the GLP-1 drugs are changing the food industry. And in fact, there's major companies. Nestle, again, a major confectionery company, has already developed a lot of products designed just for these users of the GLP-1s. So I think we're going to see the evolution of it. No question about it. We are seeing people eating less. But what we also see is them trading up. So those people who might have had a Snickers bar before, now that they're on Ozempic or Wegovy or one of the others, what they're doing is they're instead having a 1-inch square of premium high dark chocolate.
And then we talk about this particular merger in terms of the American snack labels that we see on the grocery store. But would this combined company also have a more robust global portfolio?
Absolutely. If you take a look earlier this year, Mars acquired a UK-based chocolatier, Hotel Chocolate, and that was for about, if memory serves me right, about $55 million. So what we are going to see is Mars moving more into global. These brands, again, Pringles, Cheez-Its, these are major brands, and if you've noticed on television, Cheez-Its has been doing enormous amount of TV advertising, more than they probably ever have. And probably this is one of the reasons that they really wanted to promote the brand, promote their products in a way to acquire or to be acquired.
Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com in Los Angeles, thank you for joining us today. Join us this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday and still to come our Monday Stock Picker. It's
the only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Stock Picker Monday, and helping us out this afternoon is J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America, president of Tasty Trade in Chicago. J.J., thank you for joining us today. And some people look at the screen today, they see all that red, and they see a sell-off, but other people see an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. And I mean, you know, you've talked through the whole show about the sell-off and, you know, people not to panic, et cetera. And I think you're right. There's always opportunities here. So I think many of your listeners have to say to themselves, how many times have I thought if I could buy whatever stock it may be at a certain price point? Well, this may be that price point. And again, you don't have to be all in or all out, but probably an area that you may want to start nibbling at certain stocks.
And I was going to say, does that inform your decision making today on your two selections? Because both of them on this Stock Picker Monday are literal household words, beginning with Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola being a staple, and actually, you know, this is one that, you know, I look at, and it's not normally, I don't normally like to buy stocks or think about stocks that are at 52-week highs. I see our clients are really buying it today, and the reason I think people are doing it so much is because this is a stock, you know, when I say Coca-Cola, exactly what you just said, it's been around forever, right? But more than 10% organic growth over the last year, that's incredible for a stock that's been around this long, and also raising their earnings guidance. And at the end of the day, there's always noise around stocks. Earnings run stocks, Earnings run the market. You have good earnings, the stock will react over time. And again, this is one that I think, given all that's happened over in all that they've reported over the last few weeks, to see where it's at today, maybe something that I think people look at and say, this is a pretty interesting stock longer term.
And your next selection is the company that sells books over the internet. We're talking about Amazon.
Yes, they sell books and a few other things now over the internet, and you're exactly right, and that's exactly why I think people like them so much, is it's more than just the Amazon story. You look at what they've done in cloud. They have the one area that I think people have been a little bit critical of them in their earnings, and probably rightfully so, is the fact that they've spent more than many of their competitors on AI, and nobody's truly been able to monetize AI yet. But back to where are people in tougher times? You know, again, this market sell-off in many ways being caused by the fact that people aren't as confident in consumers going forward. Well, where are they going to turn to is the alternative that gives them cheaper prices. And as you and I know, Amazon.com really does fill that void pretty well. So even if on some of the other areas of their business they might be a little bit behind, that constant revenue through Amazon.com, the announcement a few weeks ago of their ability to take it to some of the more rural areas, I think if you look around, the cash flow there is just so incredible long term that it's really tough to make an argument against them.
J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America, president of Tasty Trade, based in Chicago. Thank you for joining us on this Stock Picker Monday. His selections, Coca-Cola, K-O, the ticker symbol, and Amazon, A-M-Z-N.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app